This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Hello and welcome to Wentzmoe Kings Meadow, the podcast that follows the fantastic Chelsea FC women's team, even if we don't always pod about it. Now, the season has come and gone, but seeing as we missed out on a few weeks of recordings, it's only fair we sit down and reflect on another incredible season, a fourth consecutive WSL title, a third consecutive FA Cup, and a narrow UEFA Women's Champions League semi-final defeat to the eventual winners FC Barcelona. 2022-2023 season had it all: shock defeats, massive injuries, manager illnesses, record crowds, and of course, trophies. And then the next thing, Muscats, is who better to join me in that than my co-host, Jane and Dane? But neither are here, which is great. But I do have some very friendly faces staring back at me on Zoom. The first I'll come with, someone that you would have heard of before, is Sophie Spittle. Sophie, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, Dean. Good, thank you. Yourself?
Very well, just getting back into the swing of things. Feels like I've not done this for so long. I can't remember the last time we did it, actually. So I was ill and then busy moving house and stuff. But yeah, good to see you again.
Cheers.
Yeah, and then we've also got Mr. Johnny Sillitoe. Johnny, how are you doing?
I'm all right, pal. Thank you. Cheers for having us. And I hope you're all right as well.
Yeah, I'm fine now. Now, because people wouldn't have heard Johnny before, and they might detect an accent there. Just confirm sort of your Chelsea roots and your Chelsea heritage there.
Just a bit of a rebel, really. All my family are Man United, and I started watching Chelsea in the Cup Winners' Cup in 1998, and just thought I'd have these. I didn't know where they were from, and it's cost me an awful lot of money down the years. Won't change a thing, though.
No, yeah. Johnny is one in the family that had sense, is what I would say in response to that. Somebody also you haven't heard of on the show before, but you might have seen him in a few selfies along the way, is Mr. Simon Kingman. Simon, how you doing?
Yeah, all good, thank you. Yeah. I spent a couple of weeks playing football, but really missing it now. Not to do, really.
Yeah, Wi-Fi letting you down a bit there, Simon.
Good to be on the show.
Yeah, good to have you. And then we've also got someone who's very popular in our Discord channel, if you're not in it, Mr. Richard Bates. Richard, how are you doing? Good to see you.
Yeah, good. Thank you very much, Dean. Yeah, looking forward to chatting about, wasn't it, again, another great season for the Chelsea women. And hopefully setting up things to come for next season as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, on the show tonight, in part one, we will look back at the key moments across this season. And in part two, we'll be asking if the normality of winning means the pressure is on in Europe. And then we'll go through some personal high and low moments and give out some virtual awards that mean absolutely nothing to the players. But passes the time for us. Now, remember, we do record live on Mixlr when we record podcast. We are live now, if you're listening that way. Hello. You can listen to that by heading to mixlr.com/WentSmokingsMeadow. You can join in the show by posting in the chat box, and I will read them out if anyone notices we're back when recording. So I didn't really tell anyone. Now, before we get into all the season, this is the perfect opportunity to remind you that a subscription to Kings Meadow Chronicle for next season are available online by kingsmeadowchronicle.bigcartel.com. Kings Meadow Chronicle features a host of great writers such as Sophie Spittle, who joins us now, Simon Kingman, who also joins us now, Rebecca Grasby, Clayton Bierman, Harry Edwards, Jeremy Goldenberg, among many others. A subscription costs you £14 plus delivery, so that's seven issues across the season. It's available worldwide. Alternatively, PDF subscriptions are available for just £7, and copies get emailed directly to you on launch day. The link is kingsmeadowchronicle.bigcartel.com/product/2023-2024-subscription. We'll leave that in the link box for you, and you can order that today. And we will be right back.
For Chelsea fans everywhere, this is the ultimate football app for you. For match highlights, interviews and the best Chelsea videos and podcasts. Download the free CFC Blues app now from the App Store and Google Play.
Welcome back to the start then of the Wentworth Kings Meadow season review show. Boy, what a season it was. 2022-23 was due to start last September, if you can remember that far back, at Stamford Bridge versus West Ham, a game postponed due to the passing of Queen Elizabeth II. So our season opener saw us away against Liverpool. Sophie, recently promoted Liverpool. Many would have expected us to go there and, you know, just absolutely blow them away. It didn't turn out like that. We had an injury to Pernille Harder in the warm-up. Emma messed around with the lineup. And we ended up losing 3-2 in what was a dreadful game. But it's happened before at the start of the season, hasn't it, where we've started poorly?
Yeah, it seems to be a ongoing issue. I think the only win we've had in the start of the season was the 1-0 win against Tottenham at the Bridge a few years ago. We drew with United, we've lost to Liverpool, and we lost to Arsenal. So hopefully next season we won't start with a loss.
Yeah, hopefully not, unless it's away. So I don't like seeing us lose at home. Johnny, it's, you know, a tough one to sort of to get our heads around, really, isn't it? Because we're looking back at the season in hindsight, how strong we were at the end of the year. Do you think the hangover from the Euros maybe affected the squad a little bit, or that game being postponed sort of threw the plans out the window, and obviously the injury in the warm-up as well?
Yeah, possibly so, yeah. I mean, started the match well, though, didn't we? Went a goal up and that. So, we did go a goal up, didn't we?
Kev got the penalty. No,
the penalty on it, yeah. So, it's not even like we didn't get out of the traps. It's felt it started well. And then as soon as the first goal goes in, you think, with them being at a level AI, you think the floodgate's going to open, but obviously it didn't do. And, yeah, possibly angle from the Euros, but yeah, mightily disappointing, and it just puts you with less margin for error for the rest of the season. It's something you don't want to repeat, obviously.
Yeah, Simon, as Johnny says, you know, you can't lose many games in the WSL over the course of an entire season if you want to win it. Any concerns from you early on that, you know, it might not be as straightforward for us this year?
So they go on, who's that?
I think Simon's Wi-Fi is dropping out of there.
Mm.
I'll come to you, Richard. We'll move on from Liverpool because we don't want to talk about defeats too much. You know, next three games in the league, Man City 2-0, West Ham 3-1, Everton 3-1, sort of back to normality, wasn't it? And, you know, a sign that even against Man City, you know, another team that seemed to struggle early on, that we were back, you know, where we thought we would be.
Yeah, exactly. And that we coped so well, I think, with the fact that Man City had a lot of the ball, from what I remember of that game. But I don't remember them creating sort of too many sort of open chances, at least from what I remember. And yeah, as you say, it was a good time to play them, given they'd also lost 4-3 away at Villa in the first week of the season. So yeah, it was a good time to play them as well. And yeah, I believe it was Fran and Amarin Mielda penalty. We're not going to be talking about too many of them in this review, I don't think. But obviously, as you say, the bounce back wins against the West Ham and Everton, and I think I remember the Everton one mainly for Neve Charles sort of like running through on goal and scoring. It was like quite a strange sight because I don't think I'd seen too many goals scored by Neve like that. But it was a great finish, and yeah, as you say, it was a good bounce back to the start that we had away at Liverpool.
Yeah, I'm going to try Simon again because he's moved positions. I think he's plugging the box into himself now. Simon, we'll try you because after those three games, we returned to Champions League football. And given what happened the season before, we got knocked out of the group stages. You know, how much pressure do you think was on Emma Hayes and Chelsea for that, you know, the group they was in?
Yeah, I think she had problems. She had to get that squad together and fresh with the Champions League. It was disappointing the previous season. Started off well. The PSG, I think. PSG, yeah.
Although you moved, Simon, but I'm going to say that's worse, if anything. I don't know if you maybe
got it
on the phone. Yeah. I did hear Simon say we started well. We did sort of the 1-0 away win against PSG. Don't ask me who scored, you'll probably know yourself. But that sort of that settled the nerves for you in that group of death, as it was, so to speak.
It was Millie that scored from a corner, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't anticipating. I mean, I'm a pessimist when it comes to football, as listeners might remember. I wasn't anticipating a win at the Parc des Princes. So to get a win and to close it out and to defend as well as we did and create chances but not take them, I think was a real positive.
Yeah, it was. Johnny, all this was without Emma Hayes on the touchline. She was actually out ill at that time. And that sort of showed the leadership of this squad, you know, both on the pitch and off it, that we struggled without her, do we at all?
No, I think it's testimony to the psychological impact she's had on the club. Obviously, put us in that position where she was missing herself and the players are able to manage the situation. You know, any of us, like you talk about Arsenal, talk about their injuries that they've had this season, everything. We lost our manager, who's been absolutely instrumental in putting the club where it is now. So I think it is testimony to how she's drilled them players to stand up and be counted at really tough times.
Yeah, which I don't think you can really underestimate, you know, missing your manager. You know, you can miss key players, but you've got a squad. You've only got one manager, but luckily for Chelsea, I think there's, you know, at least two on the touchline in, you know, Tanya Oxtraby, who was a manager herself at Bristol City, Denise Reddy as well, who's been a manager, and they've also got, you know, other coaches they lean on. But, you know, we have got, you know, more than one coach, basically, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, it just shows how solid the structure is that we've got, and also how talented and professional the coaches are and how well prepared they are to set the players every week. And also the players themselves, I mean, they've got to get the job done on the pitch. And, you know, they did that throughout that entire run. I think they won every game during the period that Emma was out, if I remember rightly. That really just does emphasise how well organised and how well run the club is from that side of view.
Yeah, there's almost a campaign to keep her away. I think at one point we got playing so well, but it wasn't to be. We're going to try Simon again. Although he's asked him to join the waiting room. No, let's skip straight past him. Let's see if this connects. This is great radio. No, let's carry on anyway. Sophie, I want to talk about the game at Stamford Bridge on the Let's mute that. It's copying me back. Where was we? November the 20th, when we played Spurs at Stamford Bridge. The first game back there since Spurs in, was it 2019? Was you at both games?
Yes, I was at both games.
Yeah, so obviously the first game in 2019, they gave away all the tickets. They were expecting a full house. Didn't get that. Do you think they learned the lessons from that and it was a better experience for you in 2022?
I think they did learn their lesson. I also think that women's football has moved on so much from that point that we now realise you need to put a value on women's football. And by giving tickets away, you aren't going to encourage people to come back because you're not putting a value on it. Yes, they may enjoy it, but they're enjoying it for free. And there's also less incentive for people to turn up. Even when tickets are too cheap, there's less incentive for people to turn up. But I think the atmosphere was better than it was in 2019. I think we're getting more, and as the games at Stamford Bridge, more and more games during the Champions League happened at Stamford Bridge this season, I think the atmosphere got better and better. But that's obviously for later in the pod. I think they did learn lessons. I think there's still more lessons they can learn, how to get a full crowd there, how to try and build that atmosphere. But I think we have to play more games there. King's Meadow is great for some of the games and it's a really tight atmosphere. But if I think we're going to get more and more pressure to play the big games, the Arsenals, the Cities, the Uniteds at Stamford Bridge. And the more we play there, the more it will feel like our home. I think it got pointed out to us that we'd played at Wembley more times than we played at Stamford Bridge, which is great because we means we've been in lots of finals. But it's not brilliant in the fact that we haven't played many games at Stamford Bridge. So, yeah.
It's some stat, isn't it? Johnny, I'm a big believer that we should be pushing to play at Stamford Bridge more often. And I think games without growing King's Meadow 4, you know, that should be the real alternative. And I think annoyingly, Arsenal lead the way in this with what they've done with the Emirates in terms of their marketing and stuff. And it's because I know there's some people that think, you know, we play at King's Meadow, that's it. It's the atmosphere, the pitch, the players know it. But is it holding us back now?
Yeah, I'd imagine so. I do agree with certainly like a really, really big game. The more games you play there, the more they'll be used to the pitch. But I didn't like the idea of making one of the first games at Stamford Bridge a big game because you think you lose all home advantage. I wouldn't want it to play Man United, Man City or Arsenal at Stamford Bridge. But obviously, it's happening now and it doesn't need to happen more regularly. So it isn't just for the big nights and that.
Yeah. Rich, what about you? Because, you know, everyone does have different opinions on this. You know, I think they should just sell the Grade A games as a package, maybe, all at Stamford Bridge. You can fit them in the schedules, you know, quite easily. I think there's been so many games where the men's team aren't playing and the pitch isn't being used. It happened... the game we're going to talk about next, where we cut the frozen pitch, Stamford Bridge was empty. But are you a believer that, you know, we can make that move, or we need a stepping stone in between that, sort of from King's Meadow to Stamford Bridge?
It's a difficult one, given the disparity between the size of the grounds. But I do think we need to play more games at Stamford Bridge, more so because of the rules with UEFA. And if we're going to go deep into the Champions League, we have to play at Stamford Bridge. And I'd prefer it if we played more games there so the players got used to the pitch, the surroundings. Because we only played there four times last season, if I'm right, because we played Spurs, PSG, Lyon and Barcelona. And obviously two of those were knockout Champions League games. So, yeah, it's a really difficult one. Due to the sort of disparity in the capacity of the crowds. But I do think that, if you could do something like, as you say, where you group together, maybe you have Arsenal, United, City, maybe one other, you know, that's over a third of your, you know, of your WSL home games at Stamford Bridge, as well as the Champions League ones. It could be, you know, you could be looking at something like that. I definitely think we should be playing more at the bridge, mainly because of the reason where we have to play those later stage Champions League games there and getting used to the surroundings.
Yeah, I think maybe that was a hindrance against Barcelona, what we'll talk about, because they actually brought very noisy fans to the Bridge and they certainly would have heard them on the pitch. We're going to try Simon a fourth time now. He's switched to his phone. Is that any better, Simon? Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, can hear you. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Hallelujah. There he is.
Is that better?
That's much better. I'm going to move on from Stamford Bridge, Simon, because we're going to move to January and that game against Liverpool, the one that was postponed after 6 minutes. Quite the farce, wasn't it?
It was. It was. And I think the fact that nobody knew what was going on as well, we were all queuing up outside, weren't we? And it was cold. And I think we were all really surprised that it hadn't been called off earlier on in the day. Checking the phone and checking the TV before we left. And it was, yeah, and it was just all the rumours flying around. It was going to be on, it was going to be off. I mean, it was, we had some poor Liverpool supporters sitting next to us that had left, poor Liverpool supporters, not really poor Liverpool supporters, but Liverpool supporters that had left at 4 o'clock in the morning to get there. And they didn't even get their hot dogs for the next game, so.
I missed mine as well, to be fair. So
I suppose there were a few like that. Yeah.
John, would you travel down for that one?
Did I?
Yeah.
No, thankfully I didn't. Flick the telly on. It was absolutely appalling. And it's not often I'll give any sympathy to Liverpool supporters, but I did feel for them in that respect, especially when it's something that's not as, it's not exactly the hottest ticket in town, is it? You know, the women's game, it's not seen that way. So for them to be up at that time and put the effort in, put the miles in, that could have been called off earlier. They could have been there, Birmingham turned, gone home and all that. To make them go all the way down was absolutely disgraceful.
Yeah, I spoke to a Liverpool supporter on the pod and messaged them at the time and they had put the coaches on. They're using all the club LFC coaches, all got down there. And then obviously, as it unfolded, you know, Rich, the pitch was frozen. The ref apparently had tried to call it off and under pressure to put it on because of the TV. Just shows, you know, we're talking about moving to Stamford Bridge and getting the fans in. That is a thing that's going to impact the game, isn't it? Because it's going to turn people off almost straight away.
Yeah. And I mean, I was also coming up on the train. Like I don't live inside the M25. So it's also a bit of a trek for me to some extent. Obviously not as much as for Liverpool fans, but it was a little bit. And I kept, you know, checking my phone that morning. And once I saw that I think it was the official Chelsea account, basically said that the game was going ahead, I was like, okay, great. You know, it survived the pitch inspection and, you know, thinking, okay, it's going to, you know, it might get sort of a few degrees warmer for, up until kickoff. So it shouldn't be any problem. And then when you got to the game and you saw the warm-up and you saw that everyone was just Bambi on ice, I mean, I can't tell you how many times Neve fell over in that small period during the 6 minutes we played. It was farcical. Obviously the facilities at Stamford Bridge, you've got obviously the undersoil heating and you'd think that that definitely would have made a difference, would have allowed them to, you know, to play that game. And exactly. It's, you know, we want the women's game to be taken as seriously as it possibly can. And, you know, seeing this happen, you know, on BBC Two, that definitely doesn't help with trying to show off the professionalism of the league. So, yeah, it was a disappointing day, I think, for everyone, really.
Yeah. And Sophie, I suppose not a great look for Chelsea either, you know, not to have, you know, they've got one of the few teams with their own stadium for the women's team, not to have, you know, the undersoil heating. And we know, you know, Todd Boehly and his group hadn't been owners for that long. And it's something that the previous ownership hadn't undertaken either. But shows the areas where Mr. Boehly's saying just the, what's the word we want to use now? Like the surroundings for the women's team need to improve. You know, that's one area where I think they should be sort of on it. And, you know, we haven't heard anything in the summer yet, what they're planning to do, what they want to do. Seems to be a bit quiet on that front and they need some PR and I think this would be good for them.
Yes, I don't know if it's as simple as just putting undersoil heating in, though. I don't know if the electricity has got enough power, or however it's powered, if there's the plumbing facility for it, if there's even planning permission required. I don't know how simple it is to do. So whilst I appreciate undersoil heating seems to be the answer, it may not be as simple as just putting it in. But until the club communicate with us, we're never going to know if that's the case or not. So be interesting to see what happens this summer if they do. And again, interesting to see what happens next winter. Weather is only going to get more and more extreme. So we're going to get these huge cold snaps, and football's going to have to deal with it. And it wasn't just women's football. I live near Peterborough, and Peterborough cancelled their match with like 2.5 hours, not even 2.5 hours, an hour and a half before kickoff on the Saturday for the same reason. So it was across the football pyramid that it was happening. It just so happened that our game was on TV, and yeah, it didn't make us look very good.
Yeah, hopefully there's some...
More than that, it didn't make the WSL on women's football look particularly professional, which is probably more concerning.
Yeah, well, Bowie might be Googling Saudi under soil heating specialists, see if they can help. Well, I've lost my script now. Sticking with a farce, Simon, I'll come back to you, because the next game I want to talk about is the Conti Cup final, which took place at the start of March, where we lost to Arsenal, which is unusual for Chelsea and Emma Hayes.
I think we started, well, we scored too early, basically, and I want to take some of the blame as well, that in the Kingman House, when it's Cup final days, we get the flags out, and I'd totally forgotten to put the flags outside. So I think part of it was we scored too early. Part of it was us not putting, or me not putting, the flags outside.
Yeah, I'm going to go 80% with you, Simon.
Yeah, it's fair enough. No probs. I'll take that.
If you put the flags out, maybe we score early, 1-0 win.
Yeah. True. It was disappointing. Really disappointing. Because we are better than Arsenal, aren't we?
Obviously, of course.
And it was disappointing. I went with Dylan. It was just the two of us, and we were, you know, really excited for it. And we found a parking space nearby, and things were looking good. And then, yeah, very un-Chelsea-like as well, performance.
Yeah, usually, Johnny, you know, cup finals, you know, we talk about mentality a lot with Chelsea. Seems to be missing in this Conti Cup final for the second year in a row.
Yeah, thought it was going to be a walkover when he scored. And then as soon as they equalised, I didn't see much from Chelsea after that. But I think it was quite telling. The next game was Brighton, 7 changes made. So Emma wasn't pleased with it either, evidently.
Yeah, the question I got, Dan Rich, is, you know, worst performance of the season, ?
It's hard to argue with that. I mean, the Man City away game in between the Lyon legs wasn't great either. But I think that game could be emphasised pretty well. I think it was when we were 2-1 down, and there was a sort of a bit of panic in the back line, and Magda just smashed the ball like straight into Aaron's face from about like 10 metres away. I think that basically perfectly encapsulated that game. And then the second half of that game as well. Well, even before that, when we went 2-1 down, we took Čangović off, which was still just puzzled as to why that move was made. When we went 2-1 down, we needed to basically create chances. We were sort of struggling at that. We needed someone on the ball who could be clever, and we took her off and changed to, I think we changed from a back four to a back five, because I believe we brought on, it might have been Khedira Buchanan. I can't remember. I seem to remember we brought on a defender. And like to try and tie things up because they're a bit panicky at the back. But then that really sort of had an effect in the second half where we were chasing the game, but it just felt like we were just trying to hit long balls to Sam the entire half. And yeah, it was just a very poor day at the office. And yeah, I think it probably was the worst game of the season.
Yeah, we're going to move swiftly on from the worst game of the season, because we bounced back with wins over Brighton and Manchester United in the WSL. We also beat Reading in the FA Cup. I think quarterfinal is that? I've lost my page again. Really must stop doing it on my phone. In the FA Cup. And then Sophie, we faced Lyon in the Champions League quarterfinal, away first, beating them 1-0 with a goal from Gururaitan. And for me, there's always been a feeling that we are, the level behind Lyon and Barcelona. We're always chasing sort of those two. But, that win and that performance, to me, it felt like it shifted the narrative and helped us in that second leg as well. What was your thoughts on that performance?
Yeah, I agree. I think Lyon and the Barcelona game, which I'm sure we'll come on to, gave the players belief that they could play against those teams, whereas I'm not sure they necessarily had the belief before, although I'm sure the performance against Lyon pre-season probably helped a little bit to do that as well. But I think, the players and the club and to a degree the fans thought, hang on a sec, we can compete. Like we did with Wolfsburg in 2021, we beat them and we got that monkey off our back. We've now beaten Lyon and got that monkey off our back. And I think it did impact the players' attitude. But equally, I think it took a lot out of the players mentally and physically, which is probably why we lost 2-0 to City in the game in between the two legs. I think if we'd played City at any other point in the season, we probably would have got a better result there. It's just unfortunate that we had to play them in between those two legs. I'm expecting the same next season. They will have to play somebody big in between Champions League knockout legs.
I mean, Johnny, as Sophie says, lost 2-0 to City in between those two legs. And even with a squad as deep and as big as Chelsea's, it's difficult to have, 11 to be as good, to beat Lyon on the Wednesday or the Thursday, whenever it was, and then beat Man City on the Sunday. And, we've lost two huge players already in Harder and Eriksen. Replacing, those two is crucial, isn't it? To have, options and be able to rotate and put your efforts into all competitions, because it's going to get harder to keep doing what we're doing, and that's winning, consecutive titles.
Yeah, certainly that City game on the way down, I think everyone just had to take a draw after what had happened midweek, and then knowing Lyon was coming, it was obviously didn't expect it to be quite as spectacular as it was, but it's tough when you got a game like that in between. It just looked knackered as well, to be fair, for that City game, just no spark whatsoever. And weren't great, was it,
No, I think that's one way to put it, not great. Definitely describes it pretty well.
Not sure how bad I can swear on here, so it just went with not great.
Well, kids might be listening, but fuck them.
I'll stick with not great.
Yeah. And then obviously, Rich, we moved back to the home leg against Lyon. And actually, I think we played badly in this game as well, but that away win obviously kept us in the tie, 1-0 at full time to Lyon, obviously. Then they go and score in extra time. It seemed like that was the end of the road for Chelsea at that point. 110 minutes in, a team like Lyon with all that experience, 2-1 up. What then transpired was pretty special, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the first half, I think we did create some chances. But in the second half, that definitely dried up, and Lyon eventually took control. I think the most disappointing thing about the first goal we conceded was it was just so, like, it was just nothing. It was such a sort of a disappointing sort of like just like a scrappy finish in the near post from a centre back, and then having like a perfect angle of De Brits's goal in extra time is basically at that point thinking, well, we've not created anything for an hour. We're going to basically, it's going to take something's going to happen out of nowhere. And that's exactly what happened. Lauren James brings the ball down in the penalty area. Kind of like it was a ball that got like clipped into the box from Berger. I think we won the first header. Wendy Renard like misplaced a header, if I remember rightly. She didn't get full contact on it. And then it ended up, dropping to Lauren James, and she gets the foul. And I mean, that wait for the VAR check, I mean, it did feel like it went on for absolutely forever. And then it took forever then for Marin to take the penalty. Once Marin scored, I mean, I guess you wouldn't want anyone else to take that penalty in the world. Sticks it top corner, 128th minute of the game. Yeah, it was just unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable ending to that game.
Yeah, Simon, that moment, you know, of waiting for Marin to take the penalty, the players being sent away, probably as tense as it's got, I suppose.
It was fantastic, but my own personal low point of the season was that I couldn't see a scoring. And I've got to get up for work at 4 o'clock the next morning. I've got Dylan with me, he's got school, and we left early. As soon as the board went up for the extra time, I said, come on, Dylan, let's get down on the tube station. So I got down on the tube station. Somebody went, Marion Mielders just scored a penalty. Oh, no. And then there was about a dozen of us maybe watching it on the phones, the penalty shootout, but all at different times. So you'd get one person and then it would sort of filter through, and it was like a Mexican wave of penalty shootouts. But it was, I mean, that night was... It was buzzing the bridge, and we were really poor, and the difference in them and us was amazing. But we pulled it out of the bag, and that was absolutely sensational. And I've learned a valuable lesson: never leave a game early.
Yeah, you can have a day off school next time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so if you're going back to playing games at Stamford Bridge, you know. Huge moments like that deserve great settings, and it sort of made it more special, I suppose, that it was at Stamford Bridge, and Berger saves two penalties. All our penalty takers are fantastic. Jess Carter as well stepping up, putting it in the net. It was just a fantastic moment, and when we go on to give our season highlights, I suppose this one's going to be up there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm lucky enough to have been to a lot of brilliant European nights at the Bridge, going back as far as Vicenza, and that is up there. That's up there with all of them, with Napoli, with Bruges, with Vicenza, with all of them. That game's up there. And I think for those of us that were there, and for maybe the women, the players, it was almost like a defining moment in our relationship with Stamford Bridge. We needed a result like that there to develop that relationship with Stamford Bridge. And I think it didn't feel like, somebody told me there's like 15,000 or less fans there. It felt like 30,000 at that moment in that penalty shootout. It felt as intense as any of those other big 42,000 capacities at the Bridge. But yeah, I think it was important that players like Magda and Maren and Millie got that moment at Stamford Bridge, because now they feel they've got that relationship with it. So it's not going to be quite as daunting to play big games there in the future, I think. And what a great way for Magda to finish her career. She actually got a big moment at Stamford Bridge, which is brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the greatest Chelsea games at Stamford Bridge, as Sophie says, men and all women, I think. And hopefully we'll see some more next season. Moving on, obviously, back-to-back wins over Aston Villa got us into the FA Cup final. And then we're going to come on to FC Barcelona in the semi-final now. Another game at Stamford Bridge, and I blame Simon earlier for the Conti Cup loss, and I must admit this was the only Champions League game that I went to, and we lost 1-0. And I tried to find Johnny, actually, to sit with Johnny, and I couldn't see him. So I went to my seat, which was right behind the goal. And as I sat down, the ball sort of come right at me in the corner from Graham Hansen, and obviously we lost 1-0. But Johnny, on reflection of that game, I felt and still feel we were too negative, and maybe we were too fearful of what Barcelona might do to us?
Yeah, possibly so. I don't think the goal helped then, though. As soon as that went in, I think there's a bit of a panic in there. I think it was just a bit respectful. And obviously, with the Champions League final result against them, psychologically, maybe they're the team that the players fear the most. And it's just natural to be a little hesitant around them. Much better second leg, obviously, but I do think we could have done more at home.
Yeah, and Rich, as Johnny said, second leg, we were much better. Do you think if we had sort of played that way in both games, we could have been in the final this year?
I think it's difficult. I think I've got more of a problem, not with the first half necessarily, even though we were losing the game, because we did create the chance. I mean, I think Gurad won, cleared off the line by Lucy Bronze in the first half. But I think it was more the second half. And I go back to I've already made the point about Čanković being substituted. And the same thing happened at the start of the second half of this game when we brought Lauren on. And again, when our build-up play seemed to involve a lot of going direct to Sam, and Sam won a lot of headers, but there wasn't enough people like around her to kind of build any sort of play from. And yeah, we didn't really do much sort of creating of chances. Now, obviously, what we did do is we did stay in the game for the second leg. The defending was very, very good. And obviously, when you go 1-0 down after, I think it was the fourth minute when Graham Hansen scored, you kind of, yeah, getting almost flashbacks to 2021 and what happened in the first half of that game. But, you know, they bounced back defensively and, you know, they were well organised and they did keep themselves in the game. But, yeah, I just felt like it, from an attacking point of view, it's in the second half of that first leg, we just didn't create enough. It was just frustrating to come out of the game, because I think there was something there, like a positive result to take back back to Spain. But yeah, I think it's definitely one that we did learn from, especially in the second half over there. Slightly frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, Simon, I suppose what we take from it, you know, we've lost just 2-1 over two games to one of the best teams ever. I think that's going to sort of help us as we go into next season, because that's going to be the one focus we have is, again, can we win the Champions League?
I think we're learning all the time. We really are. And it's just progression. I mean, Marin Mielder was immense in that game as well. But it's just that progress. We didn't lose to them like we did in the final before. They are a really, really good team. I mean, they won it and came back from losing 2-0 at half-time to win it. And I think as we go, we'll get there. We'll get there. It might not be next season. It'll be the season after. But we will win it. Definitely. Definitely.
I like the optimism.
You will.
Come to you. Because, you know, people say a lot about style and about substance, and I think Chelsea have the substance to win the Champions League, but do they necessarily have the style?
Potentially in the future. I think we've got to also remember in this game, we had our two central defenders missing and Fran Kirby and Pernille Harder. And I think if we'd had just two of those players back for both legs, we might have seen a slightly different style of football. We might have been slightly more attacking and been able to take some of those chances we created. I think people forget how important Pernille Harder, as she proved to be towards the end of the season, and Fran Kirby can be for us. And without them, I think that we did what we thought we had to do to get a result. And as I say, if Lucy Bronze hadn't cleared that Guru Wrighton shot off the line, then who knows what would have happened. Personally, for me, the away leg was my highlight of the season, because I was there and I got to watch Chelsea play at the new camp, and I didn't think that was something I'd ever get to do. So even though the result wasn't overall brilliant, for my personal highlight of the season was actually watching that second leg. And I pinched myself, because I thought we were going to lose 4 or 5-0. I really did going into that game, and to come away with a 1-1 draw at the new camp in front of 70,000 Barcelona fans, plus the 150 of us that were there, Chelsea fans. It was such an incredible experience, and I'm just so grateful I got to do it. So, yeah, whilst overall it wasn't brilliant, I think, as Simon said, Johnny said, there's a lot we can take from to learn, and we will win it. We've just got to be a little bit more lucky and have a few less key injuries to key players at getting those big games.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if we look at the results that followed that 1-1 draw in the WSL alone, we beat Liverpool 2-1, Everton 7-0, Leicester City 6-0, West Ham 4-0, Arsenal 2-0, and then obviously 3-0 at Reading on the final day to win the league. And that's some list, isn't it, Johnny, to come off the back of your heartache of not reaching that final again, losing to Barcelona. But, you know, we had to win and we did win.
Yeah, it could have been the defining moment in season for all the wrong reasons when you get that kind of disappointment. But obviously, like you say, you look at them results, barring Liverpool, pretty dominant, like eat that one out a little bit. But after that, just on a run, just we was 7 points behind, 3 games in hand, massive goal difference to overturn. But despite how gutting it is going out of the Champions League, just got a head down, business, bang, won it all, you know, won the rest of what was on offer, you know what I mean? Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, I never felt at any point that we weren't going to win the league. And you know, we were behind, you know, with games in hand, but just this unnerving confidence that we will go out and we'll win WSL games, and it proved to be the case.
Yeah, no, I think once they, you know, the dust settled on the semi-final exit, I think they must have just sat down and look, you know, we've got, you know, I think it was 6 or 7 games left in the season. You know, we're obviously going to go out and, you know, do what we do in the WSL, which is, you know, just go on this pretty impressive run. I mean, you concede 2 goals. Well, so you can see conceding the second minute to Liverpool. I think it was the second minute of that game. And then you don't concede again for the rest of the season. Whilst absolutely, the goal difference overturned in about 2 games was just like ridiculous. I didn't really have any doubts that we'd win the league, mainly because of the way the fixtures also fell as well for the other. Well, I guess it was Man United in the end, it was who ended up being the closest challengers. But also, yeah, I didn't really have any doubts. And especially, I think it was when we were 2-0 against Arsenal, even though I know Man United got the late win that day. I think it's when we won 2-0 there, I was like, yeah, pretty confident going into Reading away that we'd get the job done. And yeah, we did.
Yeah, two games I missed actually, Everton and Leicester, to overturn the goal difference. 15 goals. Was it? No, my maths is terrible. 13 goals in 2 games. Quite something. So one game sort of I didn't mention in that run was the FA Cup final. A record crowd at Wembley to watch us beat Man United 1-0. For me, the best game, best occasion, best game of the season. It felt just like a normal cup final that I've experienced over the years following the men's team as well.
It did. It was absolutely buzzing. And it's different to the men's game, isn't it? You see everybody chatting and everything. You get off the tube and you're walking along with Man United supporters and you're chatting to them and they're confident for some strange reason. They know they've got Mary Earps in goal. They know we've got Sam Kerr playing up front. So I'm not sure what that confidence was all about. But it was brilliant. It really was brilliant. And we won. We were better than them. They had a few chances, didn't they, first half? And that offside goal sort of scared us a little bit at first. But we settled down and just stayed huffed and puffed, basically. And that sometimes that can be the difference that we have got Sam Kerr. And Peniel Harder coming back for that run as well towards the end of the season was so important for us. And I don't think anybody had seen that side of her either, to be honest. She came back at the right time and showed us what we'd missed all that time. And perhaps with Sam as well, she could then rest. So she was playing in a more natural position for Peniel Harder to play as well.
Yeah, she had been in a fight all game, actually, Sam, with the Arsenal, with the Man United centre-backs. We're really on
it. Yeah, there was a lot of pushing and shoving, wasn't it? I didn't realise that at the time, but then when you see the videos of them, it was it Letizia, wasn't it, pushing her and the other girl as well, yeah. Yeah, and obviously Mrs. K was pleased that Katie Zenham didn't do anything as well, so.
Yeah, she keeps up win-win. A 100% record against...
Win-win all round.
I suppose, Rich, you know, big games call for big players, and Sam Kerr is a little bit of a cheat code, isn't she?
She is, but I'm going to carry on a running gag on this particular podcast. I missed the goal because I went to the toilet. I saw Sophie Ingle go down. And yeah, I thought it was a perfect time to just go up. And no, turns out I think she got back up like unassisted about sort of 15, 20 seconds later. I'd already turned my back. And then all of a sudden I hear a cheer from the concourse. I thought, oh God, what have I done? But yeah, no, I mean, Sam's record in cup finals, you know, it's a very easy comparison to make that, you know, women's version of Didier Drogba, like in terms of cup final scoring, you know, there's really no one better at it. And, you know, even though you put your focus on her, she still gets the job done. And yeah, having Pernilla back was a big difference. And she was also a big difference in this cup final as well when she came on, because it really gave us an added boost going forward. Yeah, she definitely made sort of a big difference to our ability to create chances going forward, for sure.
Yeah, I think the subs really showed, you know, difference in the level. They're bringing on Rachel Williams, no disrespect to her, but we're bringing on Pernilla Harder to win us the game, and it, you know, it went in our favour. And Johnny, obviously a big moment for you and your family. WhatsApp chats.
I'm the only one who follows the women. Everyone else thinks I'm mental, especially going so far for that as well. But no, I was just happy to see Mark Skinner have a little fit at the end of it, to be honest. I don't really like the guy. And I think when he said that that's not where Chelsea are going to be in the future, I'd certainly put some money on that not being the case.
Yeah, I'm happy to join you on that. I think we'll get some good odds on Chelsea still being there. And, you know, Sophie, you mentioned earlier the great European nights for Chelsea. This, again, was a great Chelsea-Wembley experience. And we've had a few of them for the men and the women now. And I think this one's right up there.
Yeah, definitely. As I wrote in the article I wrote for the fanzine, Chelsea and Wembley have got history behind them. The team to win at the last cup final at the old Wembley and the first cup final at the new Wembley. And then the first team to win in cup final away from Wembley in 1970. And then in the women's game, the first team to win the cup final at Wembley. And it goes on and on and on. And now we won the cup final in front of the biggest crowd, women's crowd, cup final domestic at Wembley. So, yeah, we have a love affair. The club have a love affair. The women's team have a love affair with this trophy. And I have a love affair with the FA Cup, men and women. It's my favourite competition. It always has been, and I think it probably always will be. And I just love to win. I love playing at Wembley, watching the team at Wembley. Yeah, you can't beat it. People think I'm mad. My friends think I'm mad because I say there's nothing worse than losing a cup final. And they say, what, so losing the league? I said, no, I'd rather win the cup final than win the league, because there's nothing worse than walking out of Wembley having been beaten.
Yeah, luckily I've not had to do that many times. So I did when the men's team lost to Spurs in the Carling Cup then. Which was raining as well, freezing cold. That wasn't very nice. But yeah, in the Wembley sun, winning the FA Cup, like you, I think it's the best competition there is. And I love that we as a club take it very seriously. Rich, you know, a fourth WSL in a row, a third FA Cup in a row, Conti Cup final defeat, Champions League semi-final defeat. Obviously, you know, that's no disappointment. No, you know, that's just... Every other team in the country would bite your hand off if you offered them that at the start of the year. But, you know, can we expect people to want more from us now? You know, are they getting used to winning too many trophies?
Yeah, and I'm never going to turn my nose up at a League Cup double. And if it happened again next season, then I would still be cool with that. However, there is the final frontier. There is the Champions League. That is the one that, you know, I think every fan wants to get, you know, wants us to win. I think that even though we got to the final 2 years ago, I feel like we're closer this year than we'd ever have been before. I don't know if anyone else agrees with that, but that's my own sort of view on it. That I feel like that in terms of the level or matching the level of the best teams, we've definitely risen up. And you know, it doesn't really get much harder in terms of a run to a final than having Lyon and then Barcelona, that probably were, you know, the two other best teams in Europe. And we had them on the side of the draw and we beat one and we only lost by one goal to the other. Barcelona had won every game, I believe, since about January 2019 at home. And we were the first team that stopped them from doing that. So that shows that the level has definitely closed. And when you say we should be expecting more, yeah, I do think that it is the Champions League that every fan wants to win. And that should be, yeah, I think that was the main target this season. It didn't happen, but because our squad's so good, you know, we've managed to win the WSL and the FA Cup again. And yeah, but yeah, that is the target for next season.
Johnny, would you give up the double in exchange for that European trophy?
Depends who's winning it. But it is becoming a bit of an obsession, isn't it? And I think my worry with that is just that I haven't answered your question there because I don't know. But I think my worry with it is that we are kind of downplaying how much we've achieved in the last couple of years if it's not quite enough because we haven't won the Champions League, you know. Four on the bounce with, like, especially this season, the hurdles have had to overcome. Incredible. I just think it debases that a little bit to be so focused on the Champions League. I mean, it was incredible to win it and everything, but I do like having domestic dominance. I like winning the big games against Arsenal, having such a good record against Man United, winning the cup final and all that. And I wouldn't really want to let that slide. But obviously, it's hard to balance a lot. So in short, I don't know. I'm not sure. Just see what happens next year, man.
Yeah, Simon, do you think this is just sort of a fan topic that we discuss, and actually the team, they're going to win every competition because that's what Emma Hayes expects and demands from them. So we shouldn't worry about whether we win the Champions League or not because we know the players are going to be focused on that. And the fact that they can win four league titles in a row, you know, three FA Cups in a row, been to the final of the Conti Cup for the past 4 years as well, shows we're in the right place.
Definitely. I think it's been said, isn't it? Their mentality monsters, really, and they just want to win everything. Personally, you got to want to be the champions of your league to then compete in the Champions League. And the more we win at home is so much better as well. Just the fact that it's starting to get debated and things like that now as well, isn't it? On social media, Twitter, and Dylan has arguments with Arsenal fans on TikTok about our success. And it really winds them up that we're winning so much. And it must do Emma Hayes as well when she sees Jonas and Mark Skinner sort of giving them grief and saying what they say. She must just put pictures up of them in the dressing room and say, do you really want these two to be winners? I think that's all I would do, just put their pictures up of him, especially Jonas, when he celebrated that one. It was that last season, wasn't it, when he celebrated their first win in the season over us. Just keep that picture up in the dressing room all the time.
Yeah, just keep tapping it on the wall.
That's right, yeah. Exactly.
This is what happened.
Exactly. Yeah.
Before we go on to sort of a break, I do want to mention Reading away, the final game of the season. Sophie, a game I missed. My sister was getting married. A lot of Chelsea made the trip, though. What was that experience? You know, watching Chelsea win the league last season, Man United was obviously amazing to be there at King's Meadow for that, but a little bit different this time.
It was a bit different. It was brilliant. I mean, there must have been 5,000-6,000 Chelsea fans there. I did feel sorry for Reading and the Reading fans. But ultimately, I don't think they expected anything else. And if you think, if there were 5,000 or 6,000 Chelsea fans at Reading, there were more Chelsea fans there than there would have been at King's Meadow. So therefore, more of us got to see us win the league because it was a Reading and Reading play their games at the Majeski than if we had had it at King's Meadow, which seems a bit wrong, but that's the way women's football is these days. So I think it actually worked out quite well that there were a lot of fans around there. And I think there was a lot of fans at that game that were fans of the men's game that had only just started coming to watch women's football this season and came to that Reading game and maybe came to the Barcelona game and probably fell in love a little bit with women's football through seeing those games. And I think that's brilliant because hopefully next season they'll come back and they'll start talking to their mates about it at Stamford Bridge and get them around. And whilst we don't necessarily want to develop our own women's team fans, I think bringing some of the men's fans across is no bad thing either, especially some of the traditional Chelsea men's fans, because they'll generate a little bit of a different atmosphere to, I think, and generate a little bit more atmosphere to what sometimes we get from those of us that go week in, week out at the moment. So it was brilliant. And as I say, because there were more of us there than there would have been at King's Meadow, it was a bit surreal. And I love the fact that they could celebrate in front of where all the Chelsea fans were, whereas if it had been at King's Meadow, it would have just been facing one area of the pitch. So it was great for many, many reasons. Four in a row. I still pinch myself that it's four in a row, to be honest with you. But yeah, it just shows what a brilliant, brilliant team and side of the club we've got, driven by Emma Hayes. So
yeah, and of course the women's team is the only place you can watch European football as a Chelsea fan next season. So if you're deciding to start following the team, you know, now's a good time to start. You know, you get to win the watch trophies, which you don't get to do that, especially not last year anyway, for the men. Now, because we're so good, we're gonna do some awards in part two. Before we do that, we're going to take a short break. Now, remember, we are on Patreon. So if you do like what we do and want to support us, you can do so for just £5 a month. Become a season ticket holder on Patreon. You get early ad-free access to all our podcasts. After 3 months, you can get a sticker, apparently. I haven't got one, but people have. You can also hear sort of our summer series podcast that we don't publish out across all platforms, because we'd like to say thank you to that. So at the moment, the episodes with Tony Farmer, George Michaelis and Matt Beard are on there. So if you sign up now, you can listen to those before anyone else. And you help us do things like live shows on Mixlr, Future Ballers, which we're doing as well. All comes from Patreon. So a big thank you to all the people that already signed up. And we hope that you join as well. And we will be right back.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. When you follow a big team like Chelsea, one of the most frustrating things is not being able to get a ticket for the match, especially when it's away and not live on TV in the UK. What can you do? Get updates from your mates? Follow online commentary? Listen to the radio? Let's face it, it's not the same as actually watching the match live, is it? NordVPN have the solution to every football supporter's match day problems when they can't watch the match live. NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords. It's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
For Chelsea fans everywhere, this is the ultimate football app for you. For match highlights, interviews and the best Chelsea videos and podcasts. Download the free CFC Blues app now from the App Store and Google Play.
Welcome back to part two of Wentworth King's Meadow. Time now for some end of season awards. And I want to start with signing of the season, because we did have a few signings this year. Khadija Buchanan, Jelena Trankovic, Eve Perisay, Johanna Rytten-Kamrad and Katrina Svitkova, the first teamers. Just because you're first on my screen, Sophie, who is your signing of the season?
I'm going to go Eve Perisay. I think she wasn't... Emma did a typical Emma thing and she introduced her in slowly in the team in the first half of the season. But I think towards the second half of the season and the end of the season, she really came into her own and was solid and offered something going forward. And she, I believe, is now our corner taker. She seemed to be definitely towards the end of the season anyway, taking a lot of corners, And so to not guru an Aaron off of corner taking, you've got to be pretty good at it. So, yeah, I think my signing of the season is Ev Perisay. Not influenced by any way, meeting her at Stamford Bridge on the Liverpool cancellation game. And she signed our yearbooks. So not influenced by that at all.
She didn't pay for that vote then, that's for sure. Johnny, I'll come to you next. New signing of the season.
I'd give it Kadisha Buchanan myself. Especially, I thought she started quite slow and looked a bit nervous. It's a bit like the exact opposite of Koulibaly for the men's team. Like, he started looking mint and then went the other way. But I think not just in terms of this season or what she's brought to the pitch, but I think psychologically, when you sign them players like that who have that kind of reputation, I think it is a massive boost. And also it puts us in a position like where you say, are we a level below the other big European clubs? I think signings like that are what are going to propel us to being in that same company. So I'd go with Buchanan personally.
Yeah. Rich, on to you next.
Yeah, I will go with Ev Perisay as well. I mean, I can't really add much more onto what Sophie said, to be honest. I can agree with every word, really. I've already mentioned Shankovic's name a couple of times. I think she did have some important contributions, no more or less than the equaliser at Arsenal, which she set up. I think that was one of the biggest goals of the season, which I don't think we've actually talked about yet. But the header and the nice equaliser in the 89th minute at Arsenal was pretty good. And yeah, she had definitely had some moments. But yeah, Eve was really, really solid in the second half of the season. I think she's probably got the right side of the defence, you know, pretty locked down. Whether, you know, she's a right back in a back four, or whether she occasionally plays as a centre back in a back three, or even as a wing back, I think she's played every sort of single role down that side. And yeah, she was very good in the second half of the season. I think Emma started to trust her quite a lot, and that's good going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Simon, who's your vote for?
I agree with Richard and Sophie. Yeah, Ev. Definitely. They all brought something different to the team, all the new signings. And I love the way that Kadisha brought the ball out from the back. And Yo-Yo, she gave us something completely different. And I think there were times a bit controversial, but I preferred her to Lauren James. A bit more direct and quick. But yeah, the way Ev played, she was, yeah, brilliant, brilliant. I like a fullback anyway. I'm a big fan of Neve, Marion, Jess, and Ev is just, yeah, another one to add to the list, yeah.
Yeah, a fullback that gets forward.
Definitely.
For a little while on that right-hand side.
Yeah.
I would have been with Team Johnny on that. We'd give it to Buchanan. As he said, shaky start, especially the Man City game early on in the season against Bunny Shaw. She looked like a fish out of water in that game, but her development, she's shown the level that she is, and I think she's going to be huge for us going forward. But, you know, three votes for Perisay, and she wins no award. There you go. There's the award that she gets. Absolutely nothing. Sorry about that. Now, the next one, most improved player. So obviously, depends on your own personal preference. We'll go reverse order. So, Simon, most improved player for you?
Neve Charles for me. I think she was brilliant. And to have the disappointment of being left out of the Lionesses squad for the Euros, I remember saying to somebody sort of after that, and it was a big season for her. And she was just everywhere. She must have played in more or less every position last season and really matured into the team and became a personality in the dressing room as well. And you watch the videos of her and her relationship with Jesse. I love that. And I know it was you that said it, wasn't it? Being the Hardison kids.
Yeah.
But the way she played was amazing. My player of the match in a lot of matches. But obviously, it's always the goal scorer that gets it. So.
Yeah, I don't think Sam Kerr can win this award, though. Although we'll see. Which way I went now? I think Rich, you're next, aren't you? Yeah. Most improved for you?
Yeah, I was going to go with Neve as well. And it was, I think at the start of the season, and especially in the first half of the season, I was concerned that when she was playing left back a lot, and I think at times it didn't really work. But I think towards the back end of the season, I think, yeah, she just looked a lot more confident. I think that it also helped that she, you know, again, had to go against Graham Hansen in the two legs of the Champions League semi-final. Kova, much better than what happened, you know, in the final. And that seemed to sort of, emphasise her, you know, development, really. And yeah, she's, I do sort of wonder if being, you know, playing at left back, left side or left wing back, and then occasionally moving to the right, and then very occasionally being an emergency centre forward may not be helping her. But yeah, the games towards the end, she was fantastic. And yeah, she was the only choice I could really sort of make as someone who's made a sort of a big leap, and it happened sort of gradually through the season. Yeah, I was very impressed with her towards the end.
Yeah, I think she's got youth on her side that we can mould her in a few different ways at the minute. And a bit like Erin, where she's coming of age into that central midfield role. We'll see what happens with Neve, obviously, in the summer. Johnny, are you a team Neve?
Actually, not. Going differently. But not sure if this does count as most improved, but for myself, it'd be Lauren James from being bit part the season before. And then just running the show at times. Obviously, she had limited chances the season before, but just how experienced she looks. She doesn't look out of place. When she's firing on all cylinders, she can look like the best player on the pitch. So I certainly wasn't expecting her to have as good a season as she did. So I'll go for Lauren James.
Yeah, that was one of my, in my sort of mentions, Lauren James is definitely one I think you can choose as improved, given that she had sort of those few minutes you said in the first year. I think when we come back to talk about this at the end of next season, hopefully she's right up there again, because yeah, that's going to mean great things for us. Sophie, what side of the fence are you sitting on for this one?
So I'm going in a completely different direction, but honourable mentions for Neve Charles and Lauren James, and also Guru, because she stepped up this season, and whilst she's better than, well, she is most improved because of the way she stepped up. But the player I'm actually going for is Jess Carter. I think she has played really well this season. She is rarely beaten when she's being played fullback. She can play in the centre of a back three. She can play in one of the two centre-back roles. She can play either side as a fullback. And she, like Neve, I think her steadiness and her improvement was encapsulated in the Barcelona away game, when both her and Neve sort of put their Barcelona Champions League final ghosts, devils to rest. So I'm going for Jess Carter as my most improved player.
Yeah, so I think that makes me a bit like the judge from Strictly that gets the double vote. Shirley, she gets to choose who goes home. I'm actually going to join Sophie and say Jess Carter as in most improved, because although I thought she was excellent last year, I think what she's done this year is take the mistakes out of the game, and she's consistently, you know, 7 out of 10 at least, you know, if not more, week in, week out. And we've seen her importance for Emma Hayes. Although she didn't play at the start of the year, she came back in and, you know, then stayed there. I think she's going to play more of a part of the World Cup as well for England. For Serena, I think she's going to be a big player as well. And again, she's got that life experience, I think, that's going to be vital to us sort of going forward. And when you think about who's replacing Magda as captain, I think she is a name that should be mentioned in those conversations, you know, alongside, you know, Erin's and the Mini Brights, etc. I've got nothing to give Jess. Again, there you go. Sorry, that's what, you know, the budget we're running on at the minute. A few more patrons, maybe we can get some awards made up. The award I hate doing, because I always forget good goals, is goal of the season. So I'm going to let all yours remind me of the goals we've actually scored this year and pick one of them. So I'll go again with you, Sophie, for your goal of the season.
when I voted for it, I voted for Lauren James against Tottenham because I thought that was superb. However, having rewatched some of the Champions League goals again recently, I'm actually going to go for Sam Kerr against PSG at Stamford Bridge. I'd completely forgotten about that goal. And then watching it back, you realise, A, just how important it was because it was towards the end of the first half. It was 0-0. We didn't necessarily look like we were going to score. And then she magics it out of nothing. And it's a brilliantly taken goal on her allegedly weaker foot. So I'm going to go a bit left field there and go Sam Kerr at Stamford Bridge against PSG.
Yeah, good shout. One that will come back to me as soon as you said Sam Kerr, PSG. Johnny?
Initially, I was going to go with Lauren James against Tottenham as well, but I've took it off her. But I don't feel as bad because she was involved. But it's Sam Kerr against Man United. When Lauren picked the ball up in her own half, looked up, clipped the ball over between the two defenders on the chest, lob over Mary Earps, Groundhog Day. And yeah, that was my favourite goal of the season. I thought it was my goal.
Yeah, always nice to score against Man United as well. And that was, as you say, you know, a great move from Chelsea in that game. Rich?
I am going to go for Lauren James against Spurs. when I saw it in the ground, it was just like, yeah, just didn't really have words. It was just sort of looked in amazement that she just drifted past like three or four like Spurs players like with ease. And I mean, Lauren's got this dribbling style where it doesn't look like she's like running fast, but she's running fast with the ball at her feet and she's just gliding past players. And then she just puts this left-footed shot right in the corner. And I was thinking, yeah, like, I mean, as he said, like after the most improved player award, if she wins it again next year, yeah, good luck to anyone else in the Champions League, in the WSL, stopping her. If she gets even better. Yeah, it was a ridiculous goal. But yeah, I did also like the Sam Kerr one against Man United in the WSL. But yeah, again, Lauren's pass was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, quite a few to choose from, actually, for the women's team this year. Simon, where's your vote going?
Oh, I'm torn now because I was going to say Sam Kerr with the chip over Mary Earps. I love a little chip over Mary Earps. I think they're fantastic. But then we were there as well for the Lauren James one. It's tough between those two. Sam. Just because of the psychological boost it gave us as well, beating Man United. It was a pretty tight game, wasn't it, really, up until then?
One I'd shout out is Erin against Tottenham. So I always like to choose a goal I was actually there for.
Stamford Bridge, yeah.
But happy to give the all to Sam against Manchester United because I was there for that as well. So again, yeah, nothing for you, but you don't need anything from me, to be honest. And then I think this one actually is going to be more of a clean sweep than the others, which is player of the season. Whole squad to choose from, but only one can win. Sophie, who is your player of the season?
Guru. She really stepped up this season. Yeah. If she hadn't stepped up, then who knows what would have happened. She scored the goal against Lyon, which, again, being there in the stadium, celebrating at that end was just fantastic. She scored both goals against Barcelona. Sorry, the goal against Barcelona. I say both goals, wishful thinking there. The goal against Barcelona. The assist for Sam against Leicester was out of this world. Guru for me.
Yeah, Johnny?
I'm actually going to go left field with this. No, I'm not really. It's Gory writing, isn't it? And that's that.
Yeah. Rich, if I had any other names out there?
No, I'm going to go with Gory writing as well. Just had an amazing season. And it's just stepped up with the goals, stepped up with assists, was just so consistent the entire season. Scored in big moments, provided goals in big moments. And also personality as well. It's sort of really come to the fore, I think, this season. She's exuding a lot of main character energy, I think is what you'd say. And I'm all here for it. And she's been a fantastic season from her.
Yeah. And Simon, are you going to go against the panel here?
I don't really want to know because it's my first show. But I am, yeah. I'd written down Neve again, and I did actually vote for her for the supports group and the actual, like, the Chelsea official player of the year. So Neve, but got to mention Erin as well. I think she's just a phenomenal player and doesn't get the accolades that everybody else gets. She's there every week. She's rolling around on the floor. She'll get back up again. She'll be tackling. She'll be passing. So, yeah, Neve and then Erin.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, not Guru. Sorry.
Well, we're going to outvote you anyway.
Yeah, that's where I edit that bit, yeah.
I don't do no editing, as you'll come to learn pretty fast. Yeah, I mean, when you say you miss players like Plinner Harder and Frank Kirby for such big periods of the season, you know, you don't feel it because, you know, Guru stepped up, and you say Sam didn't have her best season by her standards. Well, she didn't need to either because, you know, again, Guru stood up for the team and was absolutely superb, and what a player we've got there, and a deserved winner of the award, not just from us, but from the supporters as well. Although she didn't get to do the award show, did she? Because they cancelled it. It's that pesky men's team. Anyway, if I had an award, I'd give it to her, but I don't. So much like the others, well done. And that is the 2022-23 season, I'm afraid. That's all we're going to have time for this week. We'll be back over the summer with some more episodes, mainly on Patreon, so make sure you sign up there if you want to listen. A big thank you to Sophie for joining us. And Sophie, where can people find you on social media if they so wish?
I am on Twitter, but I rarely tweet. In fact, I never tweet. I'm more active on Instagram, which is just my name, Sophie_Spittle. So if you want to see pictures of me at Chelsea games, then that's the place to be. If you don't, then fair enough.
Yeah, no, well worth a follow. Johnny, good to see you. Thanks for joining us. Where can people find you and even in your work as well with Cilito Visual?
Yeah, do artwork and that as well. Do Chelsea women's stuff. Your best bet would be to probably go on the Wentamol Kings Meadow Twitter and click on the links, because I'd have to spell my name out. It's like an anagram.
Yeah, we'll put them all out there anyway. Rich, good to see you from Discord to the podcast. Where can people find you if they're not in our Discord?
Yeah, so I'm only on Twitter, at Bates in the Place, named after an old, like, dance song from the turn of the century, but yeah, with my surname in. Yeah, if you want, it will mostly be content about Chelsea when I do tweet, but then there's also other interests as well. It's not just purely Chelsea. If you can cope with... what else do I tweet about? Music, the NFL, professional wrestling, that sort of stuff. Yeah. If you fancy a follow, then happy to have you on board.
Yeah, well, if they're following me, you know, anyone is an upgrade on that nonsense that comes out of our Twitter account most days of the week. And Simon, good to see you. If people don't see you at King's Meadow taking selfies, where can they find you? And
thanks for having us as well tonight. It's Kingman Simon, or at Kingman Simon on Twitter. It's just rubbish, basically. Football stuff, music stuff, yeah. Home stuff. Follow us if you want.
Yeah, you can put faces.
It's been good, yeah.
It's always good.
Thank you.
And then people can see you at games and say hello, and then you've got no
idea. Yeah, I can sign pictures.
That's what I do, yeah.
Perhaps get Johnny to do some artwork.
Yeah.
For me, one of my selfies, maybe.
If you write, Simon, can I have a photo on a cardboard sign, hold it up.
At yeah.
I'll make it way over to you. Do that.
Thank you, Dave.
Now, the good news is that the voices you have heard tonight will be joining us on a more regular basis over the course of this summer and this season, along with some others that couldn't make it tonight, including the regular co-hosts in Dane and Jane. So make sure you are subscribed on whatever platform you listen on, so you can join us there. You can follow the show at Mo Kings Meadow on Twitter and at Went to Mo Kings Meadow on Instagram. Until then, thanks for listening. And until next time, from Kings Meadow to Wembley, keep the blue flag flying high.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.